Hello, my friends. Gia here with the Creative Spiritual Journey podcast, where Judy and I share what we've been learning on this remarkable journey we call life. If you've listened to my first podcast, you know that one of my goals is to live closer to the natural world. Today, I want to share where my journey has taken me over the last several weeks. As part of my goal, I decided to improve my relationships with plants. Does that sound odd? How do you have a relationship with a plant? They can't talk. How do you get to know them? Traditionally, I'm not much of a plant person. I don't have any houseplants because I kill them. And I loved the first garden I ever planted, but subsequent gardens I didn't have time for. So I tried to put them on autopilot with timed waterings and occasional weedings. The plants didn't thrive, and I didn't enjoy the process. I truly believe gardens need to be visited every day. As my husband and I are in the process of developing our property, I'm trying to get the garden as close to the front door of the house as I can, so that ignoring the garden won't be a possibility. I want this plant interaction thing to be easy. You might be asking, if it's so hard for you, Gia, why do you want it so bad? As part of my answer, I want to share with you some thoughts from a wonderful herbalist named Rosemary Gladstar. If you don't know her, she is basically the grand matron of herbalism in the United States. She began talking about herbs back when herbs and herbal medicine wasn't popular. It was Rosemary Gladstar, along with only a few others, who started the whole Western herbalism movement. But it's more than that. People are drawn to Rosemary's beautiful, soft-spoken nature. I love to hear her talk about plants and how to be in relationship with them and how to learn from them. I couldn't find a quote that captured what I wanted you to hear from her, so I pulled a bunch of comments she gave at a conference. She says, "Plants are our elders. In all creation stories of the world, plants are on the earth before humans. We have grown up with them. They teach and support us. Plants absorb sunlight, and when we eat them, we are eating sunlight. Or pre-digested sunlight. Plants help us feel calmer and more centered in our bodies. They teach us to root down and reach up. They teach us resiliency and adaptation. Plants are spiritual beings. They connect us to a sense of joy and self-love." Listen to what plants are trying to tell you. Life is a struggle. Find the joy. Immerse yourself in the world of plants. Give them every opportunity to lift you up. We need plants, and plants need us. Does that inspire you to want more of a relationship with plants? It does me. We need plants literally because of the whole oxygen-carbon dioxide exchange thing. But there's more than that. When I was a recreation major at the University of Utah, I had to read a book called Wilderness and the American Mind. I was really upset by the book because it basically said that humans don't belong in the wilderness, that we disrupt nature, and that we should leave it alone. I had just barely discovered my love for the outdoors. The idea that I didn't belong there seemed wrong to me. But what could I say? How could I refute a book given to me by my professors? Life went on, but I never forgot that book and how it made me feel. Recently, I've been noticing the tide in this area beginning to change. For example, there is a book I love called Braiding Sweetgrass that basically talks about this relationship that humans have with nature. For example, think about the Alps. People have been visiting and gathering from the high mountain meadows there for millennia. And the meadows are actually better for their pruning. Humans can nurture, and care for the natural world. Plants and humans can benefit from each other. So those are some of the reasons why I wanted to develop my relationship with plants. And when you put out an intention, I believe magical things happen. And here is what happened to me. I began to wonder what I was going to name my May full moon. I looked up the ancestral names, which are budding moon, flower moon, planting moon, leaf budding moon, and the moon of shedding ponies. The moon of shedding ponies? Who knows ponies so well that they can name the moon that? I wish I had ponies in my life. But since I don't, a flower seemed like the right choice for me. And because the only flowers in my life right now are wild, it would have to be a wildflower. So I started anticipating wildflower season. I began to watch and look for them. This built a sense of anticipation, and I was so excited when I saw my first wildflowers. I found a bright red Indian paintbrush, along with some tiny little daisy-like flowers that I have no idea the name of. It was 3 more weeks before purple lupin showed up on my walk, and then more lupin. Snow-white sago lily appeared next to bright yellow mule's ears. Then the cactus began to bloom. There was a patch of deep red claret cups, and a favorite, the hedgehog cactus, with a single bright pink flower perched on its crown like a spring bonnet. It was so much fun to find them, and I realized it was like having my friends show up. Was this what having a relationship with plants was like? This looking forward to seeing them again? I think so. Huzzah! I had a relationship with wildflowers I'd never realized. And all it took was some deliberate forethought. It was fun, wonderful, yummy, exactly what I was looking for. But I still hadn't decided which flower to use for my May full moon. One that I haven't seen recently, but know well from my travels in the desert, seemed like an obvious choice, and that is Datura, also called moonflower because of its white trumpet-like blossoms that open at night. But Datura are poisonous, and they're also called devil's weed, so I just wasn't feeling it. I also considered sago lily. In my experience, it is a solitary flower. And when I saw it this year, it appeared so white against the red soil that I was amazed by its brilliance. Still, I hesitated. I think I secretly knew which flower I was going to choose from the very beginning. And when I finally saw it last week, I knew the wait had been worth it. I named my May moon Globe Mallow. Maybe not an obvious choice being bright orange instead of white, but let me explain. There are lots of mallows, the most famous being the marshmallow. And yes, the roots form a globby, sticky substance that added with sugar are the origins of our modern-day marshmallows. Globe mallow, on the other hand, is generally not ingested, though it can be made into a tea, if the not-so-pleasant tiny hairs are filtered out with a cheesecloth. I haven't tried it. I'm happy just to admire globe mallow in passing. The most common globe mallow has fire orange, pea to marble-sized flowers, which cluster along wand-like stems. They may look delicate, but this flower thrives in arid, hot regions of the Southwest, growing from rocky, inhospitable soil. I've even seen globe mallow sprouting from slick rock with seemingly no soil at all. So don't be deceived. There is nothing frail about this wildflower. It's as tough as they come. And I'm going to call globe mallow service-oriented, as it is also good for pollinators, such as hummingbirds, butterflies, and bees. And speaking of pollinators, when you have a chance, do a search for globe mallow and sleeping bees. The most amazing picture, taken by nature photographer Joe Neely, will come up. The picture is of two bees snuggled together sleeping in a globe mallow bud. They are dusted with yellow pollen and have what looks like blue eyelids. This picture will make you understand the origins of fairy tales. It's magical. These little creatures are called globe mallow bees and live across the western United States. Globe mallow has been one of my favorite wildflowers since my early 20s when I first came to the desert to be a river guide. And this picture of snuggling bees has made me love it even more. But it isn't its hardiness or the sleeping bees that cinched globe mallow as my May moon choice. It was because of its roundness, the globe of globe mallow. One definition of globe is a spherical representation of a celestial body. Each bud on the globe mallow plant is round, the shape of the moon. There is something about roundness that attracts me. I've always loved the phrase we hear at church, all truth may be circumscribed into one great whole. I also love when Nephi says, I am encircled about eternally in the arms of his love. Does that sound like the best hug ever? But here's what's interesting. I always saw a hug as one-dimensional, like two arms wrapping around me in a circle. Now, after contemplating the moon and globe mallow, I see more than just a circle. I see a globe, a hug that can encircle me all the way around, side to side, top to bottom. I can feel encircled or globed in an all-encompassing hug. I love that. So recently, in those magical hours of the morning when I'm just beginning to wake up, I have imagined myself encircled in a globe-like hug from God, and I snuggle there like a bee in a wildflower. It's a great way to face the morning. Try it sometime and see how it makes you feel. Before I wrap up, I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of being in a relationship with plants. I believe all of us have more of a relationship with them than we might think, because plants are woven throughout all our holidays and celebrations. And it's not a coincidence that we bring flowers to someone who is sick. We instinctively know they bring joy, and joy brings healing. Plants help us weather the storms of life, and all we have to do is make that relationship deliberate. I want to tell you one more story. There was a time in my life when I was incredibly lonely. I was a single mom, recently broken up with my only marriage prospect, and my teenage daughter was off with her friends most of the time. I was working crazy long hours, yet barely paying my bills. I don't know what inspired it, but one day I decided to start buying myself flowers. Before this, I had always thought the man in my life was supposed to bring me flowers. I wasn't supposed to buy them for myself. But in one fluid motion, I threw that misconception out the window and started buying my own flowers. And I loved it. They were only from the grocery store, nothing fancy, but it was an amazing joy to pick the flowers I wanted every week. They would match my mood or the seasons, and they kept me company until I went to the store again. The fabulous husband I have now would happily buy me flowers every week if I wanted him to. But you know what? I learned I would rather buy them myself because picking them out is half the joy. So all this to say, if I have in any way inspired you to cultivate your relationship with flowers, there is a way. Grow them, buy them, use them in teas and baths or skin products, create art with them, whatever you want. Use your imagination, but love them because they love you and want to bring you joy. If you like this podcast, please share it with a friend. And if you are inclined, leave us a 5-star review. Judy will be here next week, and I will be back in 2. Until then, find some flowers to love. This earth would be such a lonely place without them. Namaste.